Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Pro savings days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
What secret are you keeping that is ruining your life? Story 1. I do not want to live with my parents anymore. I am 27, make really good money, and could move out whenever I want. But my parents are both permanently disabled, and I pay them rent in addition to most of the bills. They are also currently in the process of fighting the banks to keep their house. If I move out, everything will most likely collapse, and they will lose the house and have to move. Edit. For the people who asked me for an update, here it is. For my parents, the fight for the house finally came to an end, where they lost the house. They could have kept it with a refinance, but I guess the banks really wanted it, and they kept saying they lacked certain papers. After every 3 to 4 month process of submitting everything, they had enough income from Social Security, veterans benefits, food assistance, and other sources, but the banks would not cooperate. My dad would send everything, fill out every piece of paper and document that they requested, and submit everything. He kept proof of it all and verified with everyone every time he faxed it, yet the bank would always come back with, "We did not receive this one specific document from you, so your refinance was rejected." I believe they rejected the refinance 6 or 7 times for the same reason, all of which sounded illegal to me. From what I understand, it is illegal, and they had to get an attorney to work with them, and that is where they currently are. They have technically lost the house, but because it is most likely illegal, how they lost it, they are still fighting to try to keep it. It also does not help that in the middle of this, the government decided multiple times to cut off or underpay their benefits like Social Security or food assistance. As for myself, I finally had to say goodbye. It was not easy, especially knowing that even if they can keep the house, it is probably better for them financially to move to a place that is significantly cheaper. My dad decided he is going to fight to the bitter end for the house his father built. But for me, I just could not stay in that environment. Living for a prolonged period with money issues due to multiple different causes and the stress of losing the house was really taking a toll on both my parents. I was being emotionally dragged down every time I stepped in the house, and I knew if I stayed too much longer, I might not be alive today. Last year, I finally went the distance and got into a much better paying job, one that would allow me to move out while still providing a small bit of assistance. I have been out on my own now for a few months and things are really starting to look up for me. My dad is as stubborn as ever and is still fighting for the home, which I hope he does win, but the reality is that he will not and they will have to move somewhere else. I am close by so I can help if needed, but at this point, I am fully expecting my parents to have to move. I think the loss of the house is going to be a huge hit, but in the end, they can support themselves if they move to somewhere else much cheaper, even if it is far away. So in the end, I got a little lucky. I stayed strong and worked really hard, even when I was depressed, and eventually got to a place financially where I can live on my own and support them. It is not as much as when I was living there, but enough for them to get by. I still feel guilty about moving out and not sticking by until the end being when they are forced to leave the house and move, but it is something I can live with and more importantly live. I feel like my real life has finally started at this point and I can only push on and hope things continue to get better. Not the happiest ending to my story so far, but at least I am in a much better place. Story 2. I am a renowned chef to an extent. I do not have my own television show, but I have been featured on a few food television shows as well as a few shows on the cooking channel. Anthony Bourdain stopped by one of my restaurants in the early days of his program. My secret is that I absolutely hate most of the food I cook. I cater to the wealthy, pretentious crowd, and it is amazing how sheep-like these people can be. I could take a pile of dirt, but as long as I say it has been braised and finished off with some truffle oil served with a tablespoon of caviar, they will say they love it because of those random keywords thrown in there. These people are so pretentious, they only buy brand name items and their minds work the same way with food. As long as I have certain keywords on the menu and certain ingredients in the food, they will claim to love it. Most of these people who claim to have refined taste and an advanced palate are not genuine. I am trying to sell my share of my two restaurants to my business partner or other investors and get out. I just want to have a small place making fried chicken wings, not goose liver and fish eggs. Story 3. I love my fiancé, but her complete lack of intimacy is making me disinterested in our relationship. I have tried all manner of efforts over the last 3 years to get her interest up, and we have fought about it many times, but I have finally given up. I am extremely affectionate, and so was she when we first started dating, but she will only be intimate a few times a month. She says she enjoys it when we do, but often rushes me to finish, so even when it happens, it is rarely meaningful or satisfying for me. It makes me feel unattractive and undesirable, and in turn makes it difficult for me to be affectionate with her. She is beautiful and fun and way out of my league, so there is intense pressure from all of my friends to stay with her. Constant, "If you do not marry her, you are a fool," comments. We live together, but I spend more and more time isolated from her and my friends because the anxiety of feeling like I am doing the wrong thing by marrying her is overwhelming. I usually end up at home with headphones on playing games while she watches television or is out drinking with her friends. Story 4. I went to school with a kid who used to bully me. He was awful. He would shove me down the stairs, hit me with a baseball bat, and basically give me bruises and broken bones. He also used to do other terrible things to me. I got a brand new National Football League coat for Christmas and was wearing it in class. He wrote an insult on it with a marker and ruined it. No one did anything about it because, number one, I went to a private religious school. Number two, his father was the head pastor and school principal. And number three, the school told my parents I used to hurt myself. It was not true at all, but when you are 10 and every adult in the system tells your parents that there is something wrong with you, it is difficult to get them to see any different. Sometime later, my parents put me in a different school for unrelated reasons. I started to excel, made lots of friends, and no more broken bones. About a year later, the guy showed up because my old school had to shut down. He started taunting me, telling me he was going to make my life terrible again. But then later that afternoon, one of my friends started panicking. They brought a police dog to start doing locker searches, and he had a lot of marijuana on him. I knew immediately that I wanted to set that guy up. I had the whole class period to think about it. After the bell rang, I caught up to him in the hall and stuffed the stash in his bag. We could have just thrown it out, but I wanted to get back at him. I did not actually get to see it, but after lunch, he was arrested, expelled, and I had no idea what happened to him until years later. His parents were forced to send him to a boarding school. While he was there, he contracted a serious infection in a minor cut and had to have his leg amputated. While he was at the hospital, his father died in a car accident on his way there to see his son. A friend of mine dated his sister during their senior year when all of this happened. Edit for update. All of the thoughts and responses were much appreciated. It certainly was not the negative backlash I had been anticipating the entire time I have been holding on to this story. But all of this got me thinking, and I decided against my better judgment to look up his sister on social media to see how he is doing these days. I graduated over 10 years ago and do not really talk to many people from back in the day. After high school, she said he struggled with a lot of the lingering effects of the amputation. His health never improved, and she always suspected his guilt over what happened to their father had something to do with it. He is in constant pain every day and refuses to walk with crutches or a prosthetic and has confined himself to a wheelchair. In the wake of his father's passing, he has become even more of a fanatical religious zealot. He has become vice principal of another private school in the area. She does not speak to him much anymore because he is just too depressing, and since his arrest has become an unapologetic bigot. He blames others for his arrest, infection, and for his father's accident. She married one of the guys that we went to middle school with when she was 19. They have a daughter together, and she is a stay-at-home mom who seems endlessly devoted to her little girl. Their mother passed away from breast cancer the same year she got married. Story 5. That I know everything my father has done to my mother and everything else about him. He has always been and still is a severe alcoholic. He constantly tries to tell me he has been sober for years, but I work in a local grocery store, and I have watched him come in and buy alcohol before. Once, in an argument that got out of hand, he hit my mother multiple times, and when she threatened to go to the police, he forced her to get in the car, drove her to the police station, and said, "Go ahead. I dare you to get out." She was so scared that she stayed in the car. He has been trying to get back into my life for a couple of years now, since I have distanced myself from him. All he does is make empty promises and lie. Whenever he used to make plans with me, I would get all excited to hang out with my father, and then he would never show up or never call back until a couple of days later, and he would always have some excuse like,
"Listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this."
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
His car that he does not even have broke down on the highway. I know that probably sounds like a legitimate excuse, and I would probably believe it too if he did not do this every other week when I was younger and recycle the same 3 or 4 excuses every time. I ignore his phone calls constantly, but when I do, he always finds some other phone to use so that I will not recognize the number and I will answer, or he will come to the grocery store I work at in hopes that I am there. And whenever he shows up at the place I work, he always makes sure to bring my grandmother and grandfather so that I cannot blatantly ignore him without feeling guilty. I refuse to say I miss him or I love him anymore. He still lives with my grandmother, his mother, and he is 45. And she loves him so much that she refuses to see how troubled he is. And because of that, all she does is enable him to continue this way. He has not held a job for more than a year, and has not even had a job in the past 5 years. So all the money he gets is given to him by my grandmother. But despite all of this, and how much I want to tell him how much I dislike him for what he did to my mother, to me and my sister, and how much I want to tell him to stop contacting us, I cannot. I do not even care if this gets buried. I am just glad I typed it all up for once. Story 6. I am in an overwhelming amount of debt from supporting my boyfriend through medical school. I had to pay for his meals and some day-to-day supplies, such as toiletries, with my credit card, and use inheritance money since he had no family to support him, and he had student loans that barely paid his rent, books, and transportation, as well as some food. Now I owe $30,000 on student loans on top of car expenses, car insurance, fuel, and everything else for my bills. I am now employed but still not out of the woods, as I need to pay for the $5,000 on my credit card that was spent for the years I helped him so far, with 1.5 of them being unemployed, 2 being only part-time while in school myself. I pay for my own student loans as much as I can, at least. I had to apply for a car loan recently for only $500 and was turned down because of that credit card debt. That was a harsh reminder of my secret. He graduates in May, though, so he will finally be able to support himself pretty soon once he gets into his residency and gets paid. Story 7. I am a biological heterosexual woman who has to shave every day like a man. I will not let anyone touch my face for fear that they will feel my stubble. And if I stay over at a friend's house, I hide a razor and shaving cream in my bag, wake up at some very early hour, and go shave in the bathroom while everyone is still asleep. I have done laser hair removal, but a lot of my hair is too light to really react, yet too dark to go unnoticed if I let it grow. And I have yet to ever find an electrologist that actually makes my hair go away. I also have hair on my stomach all the way up to a few inches under my chest. I have been tested for hormone imbalances, and all the levels come back normal. They assume I have polycystic ovarian syndrome, but cannot get the numbers to back the diagnosis up. All of that has led to anxiety over intimacy where someone would be touching areas I shave. I get so nervous that I tense up, and it becomes extremely painful for me. Finally, while talking to a close friend about my issues, he offered to help me get past the pain. We slept together once, and he gave me herpes. He was the fourth person I had slept with in my entire life. I was 22 at the time. I am 30 now. I have not slept with anyone since, because I fear that there is no one out there who will want to deal with a very hairy woman who cannot have penetrative intimacy and might pass on an illness. All in all, I feel pretty disgusting, and like my body is something I am trapped with. Story 8. I live in the Bible Belt, and it is a very religious, family-oriented culture. My father left when I was 4, and I recently found out that he died of an overdose in Colorado. My mother died 2.5 years ago of sarcoidosis, a rare disease, when I was 14. I have lived with my grandparents since then. A while after my mother died, I became an atheist. Until about 6 months after, I could not admit it to my grandparents. I finally did, and as much as they said it did not bother them, ever since then they have treated me like a stranger. They still force me to go to church and scold me when people find out I am an atheist. Most of my more distant family is the same. The only person in my family who still treats me like family is my uncle in Tennessee. My secret is that I plan to cut contact with my family completely after I finish college and leave the country. Where I live, that is considered as bad as an act of betrayal to God. I have always been a very introverted person with a small group of friends that I genuinely trust. Any friends outside this group drift away in a couple of years, sometimes months. I hope that if I ever get married, my wife will not have much family, or at least will not make me get involved with them, and I do not want to live to meet my grandchildren. I would be happy living with only a partner and a few friends, but of course, the world is a cruel place. There will always be others who will want to get involved for their own gain. Story 9. There are parts of my past that I will never be able to share in full, but one truth is clear. I cannot feel close to my sister. For years, I carried a quiet heaviness that followed me everywhere, shaping my choices and pulling me off course. In time, the burden became overwhelming, and I reached a point where I nearly gave up on myself. Something she never realized. Only after I began to recover did I find the strength to speak honestly about what I had been holding back, hoping she might finally see the truth and draw her own conclusions about the life she was living. Before I got a chance to, he took his own life in one of the most selfish ways possible. Now my sister and her kids are devastated, completely turned off to any kind of discussion on mental health, look at me as all the bad things he convinced them I was, and glorify him as if he were some kind of saint. I even tried to keep it simple and say, I would like to get my depression under control so I can focus on school, to which she will freak out and yell at me because, oh, so you want to go hurt yourself now and put me through this all over again? How could I ever tell her that I already tried and because of her now dead husband? Storiten. I wish my brother was no longer alive. I know this makes me sound terrible, but there are reasons behind it. My brother was born 3 years before me. He was born with a malformed brain, which causes him to act like a six-month-old for the rest of his life, meaning he screams at night, always wants to eat, and is very temperamental. Currently, he is 20, and he still lives with me and my parents. Since his birth, he has developed many things: diabetes, a bad leg, legally blind, but can see very poorly. He also, due to his malformed brain, has an immune system deficiency. This means when our family gets a slight flu, he gets so sick we have to bring him to a special hospital. For example, when I was 9 and he was 12, we went to visit family for Christmas. Where my whole family got sick, we had to leave early because he started having serious seizures and went into cardiac arrest. But I digress. The reason I want him to die is because he has no sense of deep emotion, only vague tones of happy, sad, and confused. He has no quality of life in his current situation, and he is a terribly large burden on both of my parents. Even though the only reason I was born was because he was born with disabilities, and my parents wanted my other brother to have at least one normal sibling. I would happily choose to have never been born if it means my brother would be normal or not born at all. My brother stays up most of the night screaming and crying, keeping my whole family up trying to watch him, which means each of us have 3 hours of sleep most nights. But my main reason I want him to die is to end his suffering. He cannot communicate with anyone, just like we cannot communicate with him. I cannot imagine how lonely, lost, and scared he feels every day. I love my brother, and if there is a reason beyond any other I want him to die, it is because of that protective fraternal love I have for him. I know for a fact that my darkest day on earth will not come close to the sense of confusion and fear he feels on an average day. I know that if I could do so legally, I would have ended his life many years ago, but this is not out of selfish reasons. It is out of love for my parents and wanting them to have the happy life they are owed after dealing with two kids and a severely disabled child. I want my brother not to have a constant isolation from the world that causes him misery and sadness. I want my brother to die because of love. Story 11. I am a fairly good-looking, athletic, and successful man in my late 30s. I was assaulted by a woman, a friend of the bride, after my friend's wedding in Mexico. I was very drunk and was walking her back to her room after the party for her safety upon her request when she asked me to sit with her for a bit on the beach to talk. She basically sat on top of me when I sat down, and from there on, I was out of control and unable to get her off of me. I could not believe it was happening and tried to push her off, but I was struggling to stay conscious and kept passing out and waking up as she was doing things to me. I was unable to use protection because I did not have it and did not think I would need it, and she did nothing to protect either of us. I did not yell out because I was leaving in a few hours back to the United States and did not want to get caught for some kind of indecency charges in Mexico or have to explain it to everyone and deal with the police or my wife who was back in the room. At some point, I just laid back and let her finish. It felt horribly disgusting, and while she was not unattractive, she would not have been the person I would have chosen to do anything like that with while sober. When she was done, she got up and walked to her room, and I did not say anything to her. After a few minutes, I got up, stumbled into the ocean with my clothes on to wash off, and went back to my room. My wife was there sleeping, as she had left the party earlier than I did, and I made up an excuse about being wet because I fell in the water on accident while messing around. It was a huge hit to my image of myself as a man to not be able to fight off a woman. I try to excuse myself with how drunk I was, but then being so careless to have gotten myself into that situation has also taken its toll on my mind. It has been a few years, and I have since divorced the wife that I was with then, I never told her, and moved on to other relationships. But every once in a while, I have some flashbacks and feel gross, weak, and ashamed again. I could find out more about the woman and confront her or press charges or something. But since I did not catch anything from her, and the only residue of the event is in my mind, I have decided to just let it go as a lesson learned about how one harmless decision, even with good intentions, can lead to something bad when you are not in the right state of mind or physical condition. This event has given me greater insight and sympathy for what women go through far more often than men. Story 12. I find every day to be a struggle against the urge not to snap and just start attacking the people I know, for various reasons. I almost constantly have to restrain myself when dealing with the majority of them in order to keep myself from doing anything to them, but more often than not, I get by with minor appeasement from condescension, while I withhold the urge to just start hurting them as much as possible. While I am currently seeing a psychiatrist for this kind of thing, in a sense, I am so well aware of what my problems are and their signals that I can mask them face to face with a professional and generalize my issues as social anxiety. I am hesitant to bring up just how I really feel about everything, because I am more concerned it would inconvenience me than actually be beneficial. Since while I understand well enough that how I feel about all this and how I think of it is not right, a part of me does not want to be without it, and I find myself enjoying the idea of seeing them all suffer for their bad habits and poor choices. All the while, I also want to avoid the stigma and judgment of being perceived as unstable by people I have to interact with in person due to how it might affect my life. I have difficulty sleeping sometimes due to all this. I lie in bed wondering if this is how violent people feel before they go on to commit their acts. I am worried that it is more of a matter of when than why for me at the moment. Story 13. My father's presence was difficult and left a lasting mark on our family. One day he disappeared without warning, moving on with a different life. Out of frustration, I spoke up, and suddenly everything changed. We were taken out of school, questioned, and placed in unfamiliar surroundings. My mother was also forced to go through things I can't imagine. When the time for court came, all I wanted was for him to face consequences. Even without proof, speaking out felt like the only way to make sure he couldn't simply walk away. I do not know why I took it upon myself, but I did. Without evidence, as I refused an examination, he was acquitted, but was kept on the offender's register for 6 years. During that time, he was not allowed to have a child stay over at his house or visit other people's children without notifying the authorities. I knew he could not infiltrate another family, and I guess in the end, that was enough. But my mother, I cannot believe I ignored her torment the whole time. She still thinks it is true, and she never dated after him. I doubt she will ever trust again. If I tell her the truth, she will never forgive me. If I lie, she will never forgive herself. Story 14. That I was assaulted. As a male and an unattractive one, for most of my life, it never crossed my mind that I would be hurt like that by a woman. You just never hear about that, ever. Not once before myself did I hear of an adult male being assaulted by an adult woman. I was at a party for my college department, and long story short, she drugged my drink and took me to her room. She was a housemaid of the location the party was at, and proceeded to hurt me for over 2 hours. I was mostly lucid for all of this. She called me a piece of meat, she treated me like a piece of meat, and I felt and started to believe I was a piece of meat. I still do. The assault, combined with being used as an escape by the woman I love, has made me feel like all I am good for is being used. I started harming myself after it happened. I stopped when the woman I love found out and asked me to. She used me and helped me and loved me and wanted nothing to do with me. It was a very confusing relationship that is now over, for better or worse. The thing that gets to me is that when I mention it to anyone, if I say I was assaulted by a woman, the first thing out of their mouths is, "Was she attractive?" Yes, she was a little, but that is not the point. I just do not know how to deal with it, and the psychologists I have seen have not helped. I just turned 21. Alcohol is more accessible, and I think I am falling into a pattern that may lead to dependency. It is not a perfect secret. My twin knows my mother and father and the woman I love, but no one seems to care. Story 15. I am in love with the daughter of my ex-girlfriend, who I have known since she was 12, and I remained involved with her mother for 8 years purely because I could not bear the thought of never seeing her daughter again for that entire time. There have been 3 occasions when I believe something could have happened if I had pushed it, once when she was underage and twice since she was older. I believe she has similar feelings for me to some extent, at least, although we have never spoken on it at all. I am around 10 years older than her. I was several years younger than her mother. I do not have a problem meeting women. I have always had a girlfriend. When I do not see the daughter for a while, I talk myself out of my emotions. Then as soon as I see her again, and as soon as she smiles at me, once I am completely overwhelmed by an almost unbearable desire for her. I have not acted on it because I respect the mother and would not want to do that to her. And I believe the daughter feels something similar. Even though I have now broken up with the mother, I have attempted to remain some kind of friends purely because I do not want to accept that I will never see the daughter again. I think about her quite a bit, and I find it impossible for any other girl to measure up to the feelings I have for her. I know it is wrong that I have felt this way since she was 12, but I have never done anything inappropriate, and I never would. Just being around her made wasting my time and her mother's with the relationship I maintained worthwhile, which I know is a terrible thing for me to say and do. I almost certainly will not ever indulge in any real involvement with her. These thoughts are pointless. I just wanted to confess the truth for once. I have never told anyone anything about it. Story 16. I would not say this ruins my life, but it takes a lot of commitment. I was diagnosed with Tourette syndrome, an obsessive compulsive disorder, as a child. I have tried to start making a list, and I estimate that I have somewhere along the lines of 500 to 1,000 unique tics and compulsions. While in public or communicating with people, I try and prevent any one of them from happening. A tic or compulsion can come about simply by looking at someone, seeing a specific number or color, or seeing something in the background. These tics can be physical or mental, people can notice them, or they can also be rituals I perform in my head. Despite this, I have been able to obtain a master's degree and become a very social person. The hardest part, aside from dealing with a tic or compulsion every 5 seconds, is trying to hide them from people. I am not really embarrassed about it, but I would rather just fit in and avoid having to explain all of the time. Essentially, the discomfort and never being able to truly relax is very hard, and I do not wish it upon anyone. Still, I am glad for my overall physical and mental health and personality that I have developed, having had to live with these disorders. Story 17. When I was 12, my father, a huge man at 6 feet and 260 pounds, beat me mercilessly with a belt at my mother's request. He held me by my left upper arm, leaving a handprint he gripped so hard while striking the back of my legs. He hit me so hard and so often I wet myself and was left with oozing welts that caused my pants to stick to my legs. I told my gym teacher for 2 weeks that I had fallen down the stairs at my house and could not dress out for gym. All of this because my mother overheard me calling her a bad word on the phone while speaking with one of my friends from school. To this day, I am not comfortable talking on the phone while I am aware someone else is within earshot of my end of the conversation. I had been beaten before, but never with this degree of savagery. I felt like he wanted to kill me, and certainly not while my mother watched and while my older siblings were upstairs hearing it all and doing nothing. Then to top it off, he had me call two of my older sisters down from their rooms so that I could explain to them why they would not be able to return to their universities after the holiday break because I was irresponsible and my mother was going to have to quit her part-time job to oversee me during the day. He did not follow through with that threat. From that day forward, my only goal in life was to grow big enough to fight back. I did not plan to kill him, but I was going to repay every beating he had ever given me or my siblings. I thought it all the way through, and I planned to get a full-ride scholarship to university, and upon graduation from high school, I would beat him to within an inch of his life, preferably while my mother watched. Fast forward to third year of high school, everything was going according to plan. I was in the top 10% of my class carrying a 4.0+, and my PSAT score was 95th percentile. And then it happened. My father was diagnosed with stomach cancer and was immediately operated on, and I now spent the rest of my junior year driving my mother to the hospital every night. He got out of the hospital, recovered at home over the summer, and went back to work. But it became clear that fall that things were still not right with his belly. He had not tried to hit me in years. In fact, I had lived almost a separate life since high school began. But that fall, he called me into the garage and was visibly upset when I stepped in. I was now 3 inches taller, but many pounds lighter, despite his cancer causing him to lose a lot of weight. He had the fridge open and was yelling about who let the milk spill onto his beer. I shrugged my shoulders and said, "I don't know." And he spun around and slapped me flat across the face. It shocked both of us, and I looked him dead in the eye and was beginning to wind up and deliver my retribution. And I could see in his eye that he knew the day of reckoning had come. But I stopped, shook my head in pity of him, and turned around and walked away. He died 2 months later on New Year's Eve, and I was glad. I got my full ride, went to college, met my wife, and we have had a dream life together. Our 3 children are now healthy adults themselves, with families of their own, having grown up without a single beating, and we are involved in one another's lives daily, thanks mostly to my wife's energy. I do not speak with my siblings and have not for years. My mother passed away decades ago, but before her death, my wife insisted we let her come visit for the children's sake. Part of me regrets allowing that to occur, but then again, I have never shared with her the full story. I just say that I did not get along with my parents. Today at 55, I do not think about it every day, and it certainly did not ruin my life. But on a regular basis, I still get angry, thinking about what he did and how he stole from me the payback I believed I deserved. He died on me before I could fight back. Story 18. My marriage is over, but I cannot move on for fear that my wife will hurt herself. About 6 months ago, my wife started helping one of her friends who was having a break with reality. This was an unusual situation because the friend was a previous boyfriend of hers. I do not believe she was cheating on me, and I felt she thought of him as someone she needed to protect. Then in September, this man ended up doing something reckless that resulted in him losing his life in a situation similar to provoking the police. Ever since that moment, my wife has fallen into a very dark place. She has never spent the night at our home since then, and now lives in his house, which his family has allowed. She has completely abandoned our relationship. We have a 2-year-old daughter, and she has still been caring for her. And I mostly feel safe when she spends time with our daughter. But she is unstable. A month or two after his death, she attempted to end her life and came very close. She spent a week in the hospital under psychiatric care, but none of that really helped. She is deeply depressed, but she denies it. She talks about leaving, even leaving our daughter, who I would still like her to be in the life of. My wife has always struggled with mental issues because of a rough childhood and bad family life, and our marriage was never great, but it was functional. I never felt fully comfortable in our marriage, always walking on eggshells for fear of setting her off, but we had good times too. We got pregnant accidentally, and that is why we got married, but I do not think it was the right choice. I absolutely love my daughter more than anything, but I can no longer say I love my wife. Her attempt at taking her life cost a lot of money, adding to our debt, and she has never had any interest in trying to help solve it. No interest in budgeting or avoiding credit cards. Now, my financial situation continues to spiral out of control as she has quit working and basically lives freely off the money I work hard for. Now that we have been separated for months, we are on fairly cordial terms when she is not in the depths of depression. I have expressed that it may be for the best to get divorced, but that set her off into a deeper depression with more talk of hurting herself. She thinks that everyone abandons her and I would just be another, but I too have been abandoned. I want to move on with my life and take control of my financial situation for my sake and the sake of my daughter. But I am afraid if I move down that path, it will get worse with my wife and she might take her life. I do not want that. I care for her. I feel bad for her. I wish I could help her. I just do not know when, if ever, this situation will improve and if by then it will be too late financially. Except for my closest friends and my parents, no one knows about any of this. I want to tell more people my situation, but I fear it makes me look inconsiderate that I want to leave my wife in her time of depression and mourning. But how long does that go on? She completely abandoned our relationship and did not seek any comfort in me, which perhaps hurt the most. I feel stuck in time at the moment, just trying to enjoy any time with my daughter and trying to get along in life as best as possible. But it is hard not having the faintest clue what to do next. Story 19. I want to let go. I have struggled with these thoughts since my time in Iraq, but even before that, I always wondered about death and what comes after. I am an atheist, but very curious about the world and the things we do not yet understand. I have always wondered, what if I am wrong? I want to find out. I am miserable every single day. I have been battling depression since before I was enlisted, and it only became worse during my deployment. The thing is, I have become so good at hiding how miserable I really am that even my wife forgets or acts as if she does. Do not get me wrong. I love my wife with everything inside of me and always will. I have told my therapist when I went a few times that the only reason I have not taken my life yet is because of her. I am not afraid of death. I am not afraid of pain. I just do not want to hurt her. I have been on medication in the past, but it made me feel nothing at all. And I would rather be miserable and feel sad than nothing at all. Walking through the rain and feeling cold and wet is better than walking through the rain and feeling numb. Talking to people has not helped me at all, to be honest. I just want to be left alone. Often I wish one of the rockets in Baghdad had been 15 feet closer. I find myself daydreaming about ways that I can distance myself from my wife, even though I do not want to, so that I do not hurt her as much if I eventually give in. Sometimes I wish she was not so understanding and loving, that she would not be there for me, so that I could just do what I feel I need to do to end the suffering. She is my savior, but sometimes I wish that she was not. We are fairly open about most things, and yet I can never tell her this. I feel as though it would hurt her if she knew how much I really wanted to let go. Now we are talking about having children, and it scares me terribly. I want to have kids on one hand. I want to experience being a father and raising someone to hopefully be a good person and contribute to this world. On the other hand, I do not want my issues to somehow affect my child, and I do not want to eventually give up as it has only gotten worse in time and abandon a kid who is going to need a father. Story 20. In 2009, my mother died. In March 2012, my greatest friend and my salvation, my horse of 17 years, died. In April 2012, my fiance, the love of my life and the greatest person I ever knew, suddenly died with no warning. He left for work, had a heart attack, and nobody stopped to help him. We were getting married that November. I also lost custody of his son, who we had cared for almost 2 years. The judge gave him back to his biological mother and her registered offender boyfriend. In May 2012, my dad was diagnosed with lung cancer. Incurable, he only had a couple of months left. In August 2012, the pit bull I raised from birth turned on me and had to be put down. In September 2012, coyotes came in and wiped out my entire flock of chickens, including my fiancé's pet chicken. Then in December, they killed my pug. I know it sounds silly with everything else going on, but I really miss that dog. I work two jobs, 60 to 80 hours a week. I met a great guy who is now in kidney failure. My secret is that I feel like I have failed the people I love the most and who need me. I am helpless to help them, and I am tired, to the point where I just want to quit. I am worried about my daughter. She keeps choosing men who use drugs, who have no job or car. She is currently living with my dad. What is she going to do when he is gone? How can I make sure my granddaughter is safe? I cannot continue to work where I am staying up for 36 hours straight, sleeping 4 hours and going back to work. I feel like letting go, wondering if there really is something better on the other side. But I cannot because it is not my nature to quit, even though I am so tired. Story 21. When I was about 5, I was visiting my next-door neighbor's house to play with their 1-year-old son. His parents were cleaning out the garage, and we were in his room playing with toys. He was still learning how to walk at the time and was really clumsy on his feet. And when he lost his balance and hit his head on the side of the crib, he immediately started crying. I did not want his parents to think I hurt him since he was alone with me. So in my attempts to get him to quiet down, I just put my hand over his mouth. Me being much bigger than he was, and my hand bigger than just his mouth, and desperate to get him to stop crying, I just pushed harder since he was squirming and pawing at my hand. After a while, he stopped moving and crying. I took my hand off his mouth, and he just lay there motionless. I panicked and ran to tell his mom that he just fell on the floor. His dad performed CPR on him while his mom was screaming on the phone with emergency services. They were able to resuscitate him before the ambulance arrived, and he spent the night in the hospital for observation, but no one could figure out why he had just stopped breathing that day. About a year later, he started showing signs of neurological problems, but at my age, I was not able to grasp what that meant or how it happened. When I was a teenager and able to comprehend what cerebral palsy was, I could not help but think that maybe I was the cause of his problems and felt absolutely disgusted by it. I never told anyone what I did, but I made it a point to be extra kind and patient with him whenever I saw him. I have since moved to the opposite side of the country and settled down with my husband. But the last time I was home, I found out that my neighbors decided to sell their home and move into an apartment so they could afford good educational and developmental services for him. It breaks my heart. Last month, I gave birth to my first child, and even though I barely remember that incident when I was 5, I am still extra paranoid that my chest, her blanket, her jacket hood, or anything else is too close to her face for her to get adequate oxygen. It honestly makes me feel incredibly guilty that I have a healthy child and my old neighbors do not. Story 22. Every day I wake up, get cleaned up, put on a suit. I go to work, I drink my coffee and sit at my desk, and I basically pretend to be the most boring, white-collar American information technology office worker imaginable. Every day is the same with these vapid, sheltered, ignorant people. I have to listen to their opinions on foreign policy, the government, economics. I have to sit through endless stories of fishing or hiking, or how amazing their trip to post-revolution Egypt was. Every day, and all I want to do is scream. These people have no clue what the world is like. I have seen Hong Kong from 25,000 feet while hurtling out of a plane I was not supposed to be on. I have met sheiks and princes and sailed the Mediterranean on a boat full of weapons and refugees. I have infiltrated dangerous prisons, seen missiles shot down, jumped out of a moving train, and literally looked at weapons of mass destruction in Israel. I know exactly how much Chevron will pay to make a village move in Nigeria, and I promise you that yes, Halliburton is a combatant. I cannot say a thing. I have to sit there and do my spreadsheet, and I cannot say anything to these ungrateful people who are so sure of the way the world works. It feels too good just to finally get this off my chest. Story 23. I hate being attractive. When I try to talk about this with my friends, they usually roll their eyes and say something like, "Wow, aren't you full of yourself?" I really hate having men, and some women, look at me like I am just an object. I have a hard time maintaining friendships with guys because my male friends have a tendency to want more than just friendship. I am always constantly questioning whether they became friends with me because they actually want friendship, or if it was just to get something more. Most of my guy friends are gay because I feel safe with them, knowing they only love me for me. I have heard people at my job whisper behind my back that I only got promoted because our boss has feelings for me. The fact that I am smart, hardworking, and have been there longer than most never seems to matter to them. It is the first, and sometimes it feels like the only thing people see about me. I am a funny, smart, geeky girl who has a lot to offer, but it seems as if a lot of guys are not interested in that. It is frustrating that people always seem surprised that I am smart and not shallow or airheaded. I do everything I can to draw attention away from my looks. I wear minimal to no makeup and plain, non-flashy clothing. I want to be taken seriously in my line of work, which is mostly male-dominated, but it is difficult. Story 24. I have been working as a lawyer for the last 3 years, except I never finished my law degree. I did not pass 4 of the subjects I needed. I faked my bar certification and bribed the people who work at the Bar Association to get myself enrolled. I have been a criminal litigator, and I made a mistake on my current case. Lied to my client, and he lost in court yesterday. The judge advised him to approach the Bar Association for possible restitution, and they have set up a committee to investigate me and my work. The committee includes a senior lawyer who has always been suspicious of me. One of my classmates works for him, and he must have mentioned my problems in law school. He told me very clearly that he will be examining my law degree. I cannot make amends. The university I studied in split off its law school into a separate university and contacted me during that process to ask whether I would like to continue my classes there. I never replied. Even if I manage to pass my subjects before the investigation takes off, my degree will be from a different university than the one mentioned in my enrollment documents. I am facing potentially very large claims from my current as well as past clients, not to mention possible jail time. I am engaged. The wedding is planned for November this year. I do not know how to come clean to all my family and my partner, and I feel like I am running out of options. Story 25. I have a lifelong virus. I contracted it 6 months ago from an escort. 3 months ago, my parents arranged my marriage to a girl. It was an arranged marriage. I am from India, but live in the United States. I can never tell my wife because she and her family assume I am a virgin. I plan to secretly take medication every day to prevent transmission and also to use protection at least at the beginning. Since contracting the virus, I have had nonstop anxiety about the idea of passing it on. I do not know how my wife will react if she finds out I have it or if she gets it herself. We have not been intimate yet as she is in India and will only arrive in May. I am terrified and do not know what to do. On the plus side, I have had no recurrences since getting it, and with the medicine I am taking, the chance she will get symptoms is rather small. Most support groups say that it is a mild and mostly harmless condition that is only painful during the first outbreak, and this occasionally makes me feel better about it, but I always relapse into anxiety and depression because I have to hide it. Story 26. I cheated on my boyfriend about 8 months ago. We had been together at that time for just over a year, and to this day I love him more than anything. He does not know, and I have decided not to tell him. The other guy is a complete failure who I spent almost 5 years in love with. For some reason, he always seems to be around whenever I am feeling really low, which is usually when I feel like revisiting the past. I had been feeling down around that time and wondering if I was good enough for my boyfriend, feeling like I was holding him back, like he was too good for me, that he could have anyone else, and I could not reason why he wanted me. I got drunk one night, and while spilling my feelings to that man about how inadequate I was feeling, I kissed him. I have not seen or spoken to him since then, aside from letting him know that it was not going to happen again, despite his suggestions that we carry on a secret fling on the side, and that if he ever valued our friendship, he would not tell anyone. My boyfriend is a salt-of-the-earth kind of guy, the best man I have ever met. I have kept it from him because the way I see it, I messed up. I made the mistake, not him. I should live with the guilt of it rather than putting that hurt on him. It will never happen again, and if I could take it back, I would. I have never wondered about whether or not I wanted to be with him, only about why he would ever want to be with me. Lately, I have been feeling particularly awful about all of this, and I honestly cannot figure out why it has been bothering me so much now, after months of successfully burying this memory in the back of my mind. I feel like an awful person. How could I do that to such an amazing person? Story 27. This is a much more superficial and far less life-threatening problem than most of the problems I have seen in this thread. However, it is a unique one that I have never shared with anyone before. I am a completely healthy male who was undersized my entire life and eventually stopped growing at age 15 at the height of 5 feet 4 inches. Though I was blessed with a solid intellect, good looks, and a completely normal middle-class suburban life, I was occasionally bullied for my height and had feelings of inadequacy as friends hit their growth spurts and I stayed the same. During the summer between my sophomore and junior years of high school, I decided I wanted to be taller and began putting 2 to 3 socks under each insole of my shoes to make me a couple of inches taller. This worked surprisingly well, and I began noticing the attention I always craved, as 5 feet 6 inches or 5 feet 7 inches was a drastic difference from 5 feet 4 inches. Girls started talking to me, I began dating regularly, I was accepted more by peers, and the rest was history, except that I never stopped wearing lifts in my shoes. If I did not, people would suddenly think I had shrunk. I actually got to the point where I could get around 3.5 inches taller by stuffing socks under my insoles all the way up to the heels of my shoes, and just wearing jeans all the time, so that my pants would cover up the fact that I was basically walking on hidden platforms. It has been a surprisingly easy secret to cover up, and just about everyone I know thinks I am around 5 feet 6 inches or 5 feet 7 inches, just slightly below average height. This includes my girlfriend of 3 months, who is 5 feet 5 inches. On the occasions that we are both barefoot around the house, I usually subtly stand on my toes while wearing pajama bottoms, or casually sit in a chair if she stands up. I am now 27, and I am not so fearful that she would leave me for something as shallow as being short, but I am fearful that she would leave me for lying about who I am. Even my parents think I am about 5 feet 7 inches, and I am at a complete loss for how I could ever reveal this to anyone without completely humiliating myself. Story 28. That my mother has only ever seen me as a financial opportunity by means of child support until I was 18, and money from my grandfather that I have never seen, over $170,000, and she has no interest in my life otherwise. You are probably thinking, well, she obviously spent money on me the entire time I lived with her. This is not the case, unfortunately. My dad had to give me a secret debit card because he knew my mom was using all the money on herself after he gave her a $1,400 check to buy me a laptop that I never got. Since I was a teenager and my grandfather would send me $200 to $400 checks for birthdays and Christmas, my mom would always get me to give them to her because she needed it and said family was first. When I tried to put up a fight, she would call me selfish and a spoiled brat and tell me how ashamed my grandparents would be and what a terrible daughter I was and ask if I did not love her. I was never allowed to have my aunts, uncles, or grandparents' phone numbers or emails, and I only talked to them on her phone. She constantly tries to drive a wedge between my dad and me, saying that he is trying to buy my love and make her look inadequate due to the fact that she has not had a job in years, is living off of a trust fund, having blown through my $100,000 in college savings, and my father is now paying for my entire college education so that I can avoid student loans. It drives her crazy that nothing I own she has provided me, preventing her from the ability to cut me off, something she did to my cell phone when she still paid the bill. Every time we got into a disagreement, my phone was shut off at least twice a week during this period. Even though I know and have known that she is emotionally unfit for motherhood and that I am a good daughter, I cannot fight the feeling that I am a bad daughter and that I owe her something. Luckily, I have the most amazing dad in the world and a stepmother who has gone above and beyond in filling the motherly void in my life. To them, I am incomprehensibly grateful, but I do wish my real mother would care for me as much as the woman who has known me for 9 years. And on top of that, she has developed a drug and alcohol addiction that scares me day and night. But that is another story. Story 29. I am a 25-year-old male, slightly overweight, not unattractive, but somewhat socially awkward. I am not the best at making new friends and have pretty much lost touch with all of my old ones since I am no longer in a situation where I am around them. I am also very bad at small talk, something I have gotten better at after having worked in retail, but I am still not that good at it. I can get past all this, though. None of that really bothers me. However, what does bother me is that I am 25 years old and have never had a girlfriend. The first girl I was interested in rejected me quickly when I tried to see if she was into me. This was in elementary school, and I have long since moved on from that. Since then, several girls I was interested in have all expressed some interest, but I am so afraid of rejection that I simply do not make any move at all. The last girl I had a crush on, I did work up the courage to ask her to lunch during break between classes. She accepted and we ate, talked, and walked together during the short break. During this time, I learned she had a boyfriend already and my hope was crushed. Near the end of the semester, I learned she had broken up with him and I was excited, but I knew of her plans of going to a school halfway across the country and did not want to stand in her way, so I never made a move. I have not talked to her since the semester ended, nor have I tried my luck with any other girls. Story 30. I think I am in love with my male best friend. I am a guy. I do not think that I am gay, even though I will admit to being very open with my sexuality. I do not really think in terms of gay or straight. I can become attracted to someone regardless of gender. Anyway, we are both 21 and have known each other since we were 14. He is one of the few people who always makes me happy, and I am devastated when he is not happy. Recently, he was dumped by his first girlfriend of 1 year, and it broke him. He is still recovering. I also was cheated on recently by my first real girlfriend, and I honestly did not care whatsoever. I wanted nothing more than to be with him and make him feel better, and I did, as a friend. I wanted something more in that space of time, though. I have always been confused about him, and I am still unsure of whether or not he would even consider any advance I might make on him. We have played at being more than friends many times with the words we have exchanged or just our very free form of interaction around each other. I have even semi-jokingly suggested to him that since girls have not worked for us that we should just be together because at least we would be happy. He seemed to play along and it made him feel better, I think. He did not take it seriously, though. I just do not know if it is love or if he is such a good friend that love is just something I associate with these feelings. It is not really ruining my life, but I suffer from depression and there are a lot of other factors in my life that stress me out right now. He just helps alleviate some of that stress and is there for me as a brother. I just do not know. Story 31. Growing up, I was almost the smartest and hardest working kid in my group of friends. I ended up going to an Ivy League graduate school and getting an extremely prestigious six-figure job at 25. I left that job for an even more prestigious job. But within 3 months of starting, for reasons I still cannot understand, I was suddenly fired with no warning. Now, this field is very hard to get a job in, even with a degree, and practically impossible to find a job once you have been fired once. So I went 2 years unemployed. During this time, I was forced to give up my previous high lifestyle with weekend trips and go live with my parents. I sank into a deep depression and started to develop various mental and physical illnesses, anxiety, insomnia, irritable bowel syndrome, migraine headaches, and more. I would literally spend days in bed, and I contemplated giving up. I know I had it way easier than a lot of people here, but it is hard going from someone who never had anything go wrong to everything collapsing in your 20s. I also started to hang out with the worst kids from my high school because they were the only ones that had not left my small town and would not judge me for being unemployed. I also got deep into bad habits and was involved in crime. Before giving in and applying to work at a fast food chain, I decided to roll the dice one more time on getting a job, but this time, to lie and not say I was fired. Instead, I told employers that I took some time off because my mom was sick. A total lie. Through an amazing set of coincidences, I got a job of equal prestige as the old one. It sounds like a happy ending, but I am a total wreck. My mental and physical illnesses are still with me. Although I do have health insurance now, and furthermore, I have to live with the fact that I got my job by lying. Every day I am paranoid about my employer finding out, and worse, I have developed incredible anxiety about the quality of my work because my previous employer told me I was being fired because my work was poor. I have developed lots of bad habits, near constant substance use, heavy drinking, irresponsible relationships, and the only thing that keeps me grounded is that I go to church all the time, even though I do not believe in God.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.